This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 199. That's a lot of episodes. What did you watch this week?
One shy of 200.
That'll be next week. Or actually this, next Monday. So, Mike, of course.
And I'm John.
And it's funny because I was updating some notes today and it was just like, oh, there was no Good Doctor on this week. Oh, and no School, no Superstore, no New Amsterdam, and no This Is Us. And I'm pretty sure Perfect Harmony's done. And, it's like, oh, no wonder I was able to catch up. Nothing was on.
Exactly.
Oh, and The Rookie returns, like, in 2 weeks, finally.
Yes.
And, but I did, like I said, catch up a bit. I mean, I watched a few movies, but I watched the most recent two episodes of Stumptown.
Oh, good.
The, Dirty Dex Money. The one where Dex, it's the one that takes up right after we find about the heroin.
Mm-hmm.
They wrapped that story up pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
I thought that was drag out a little bit.
Kind of glad that it's done.
Yeah.
But, yeah. They
wrapped up that whole bit with Gray having to work for Hoffman and going to cover in this car theft ring and on and on and on. I mean, okay, in this episode alone, we got... they did it in two episodes. Yes. So that is true. But this episode, we got like Dex working for the stripper.
Yep.
And we get narcotics cop get brought in, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's dirty.
Which they always are in shows.
Which it surprised me though, because I actually didn't see anything where I thought he was dirty.
Oh, really?
Like legitimately, like, he was just like, yeah, he's not sharing information with me.
Mm-hmm.
Which was true. Hoffman doesn't share information with people.
Right.
He keeps to himself. He does that lone wolf thing.
I assumed he was dirty because, you know, he was the narcotics cop on a TV show.
Fair enough. Then he stole Hoffman's file off the desk.
Yep.
And I was like, well, that's still not, that could just be he's overzealous and wants the information. Hoffman won't share it with him.
Yeah.
But then when he went to the warehouse alone, I was like, oh, okay, so he's dirty.
At that point, yeah.
But they arrested him and everything. And then the next episode, the Dex Factor, Dex goes undercover as Gray's drug buyer from L.A. for the heroin. She finally goes to one of those veteran support meetings at the bar.
Yeah.
Which aren't really much of a support meeting as much as veterans hanging out together.
Yeah. Which some might argue maybe they need that, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she meets Violet, who is the hit woman in town.
Yeah. So of course they like meet. That character.
So, of course, her and Dex meet and apparently have the sex. And then, like, feel like they feel complete with each other, which was really weird.
That did seem a little bit rushed.
Yeah. And then, of course, Gray has a thing for the girl there in the Max or whatever her name is from the drugs and everything. So yeah. When they actually do make the buy and everybody goes down as planned, you know, he helps her. Oh, and of course, the guys are going to turn on Gray and keep the $1 million and kill him.
Right. Because, again, they're drug dealers.
Well, no, they're car thieves happen across drugs.
Right. They stole a van on a LARF.
Yeah.
They were like, ha-ha, this will be funny. And then went, oh, wait.
There's 20 kilos of heroin in the back. So Gray escapes when the cops break in, takes Max with him. They flee. Everyone gets arrested. Of course, Dex runs into Violet outside, leaving the buy. Right. They get into a big fight with a cover... version of Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun playing, which was rather hilarious.
It was, and the fight itself was good.
Oh, yeah, the fight was good. You know, we see Dex throw Violet off the little catwalk they're on, and then she lands on something, and so when Dex looks over, she fell on a stack of boxes and is not there anymore.
Mm-hmm. But there was a trail of blood.
Yep. And Gray helps Max get away by getting on the Indian reservation.
Yep.
I love this.
He lined it right for it.
I love the standoff because with the natives and the local police. And she's just like, and the cop just like giving the hard look, and he just goes, okie dokie. And they all turn around and leave.
Yeah. She's like, you don't have any jurisdiction here. None.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Okie dokie. And then at the end, Dex is at the bar and this fancy foo-foo drink there that she liked. That Violet
like a
liked.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, though. I remember when it was something else with this celery stalk in it, but it definitely wasn't a Bloody Mary.
Mm.
They just made a point of saying that it was like, you know, this. It was like a Sex on the Beach or Miami Hurricane or something like that. But with the celery stalk, well, I like to be fancy.
Right.
So... But apparently Violet's still around.
Yeah, I think we're going to see her again.
Probably.
Meanwhile, we're dealing with Ansel wants to drive.
Oh, yes.
And he, you know, Dex doesn't want to teach him because basically she doesn't want him independent. And every week we go through this same thing where she's yeah. like, I don't want him independent. And then by the end of the episode, okay, I want him independent. It's not my place to say. So we went through that again.
She does have that funny moment where they're sitting in the car and he's in the front seat and they're eating food and she has that flash of him driving and screaming and being out of control.
Which was funny.
That was funny.
And then you had the asshole couple.
Oh.
That.
Fuck the fucking fucks. Them. Yeah. They're marriage counselors that can do nothing but fight with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they're awful. They're awful people.
Yes, they are. I don't know what order you want to go in. Avenue 5?
Avenue 5.
What did you think of this episode? Unlike the first couple.
It's definitely a slow show.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as slow as The Outsider, but it's slow. They can only do so much with having this many people on a spaceship that's going to be stuck out there for 6 months, 3 years, 6 months.
3 years
and then six months.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of felt like, you know, we keep seeing the captain who established in the first episode. He's not a real captain. I mean, that's his title, but he doesn't actually do anything. He's
kind of established that to the cutthroat bitch there.
Yeah. But basically, yeah, his job is to be the happy, smiling, faced representative who people can have good faith in. You know?
Well, that's because the captain actually died and they jettisoned his body. And now he's orbiting the place.
Well, no, he wasn't the actual captain. He was the head engineer who was, as the captain said, the captain of the ship.
Right.
So
close enough to the captain. He was the one who knew how to fly the ship.
Yeah, Hugh Laurie's character finds out that everyone on his flight deck, they're all actors. None of them actually know how to do anything.
Do you see anything wrong with these incredibly attractive people?
Right.
Oh, they're all attractive? No, they're very attractive. They're all actors.
I turn the lights on and off, and I make your steering wheel come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're all actors.
You're at the steering wheel, and he's like, wiggling it back and forth. Does it look like this does anything?
Yeah, we find out that if you open up a hatch underneath that area, that's where the engineers are that actually are flying the ship. And there's like three of them. They're like, hey, what's up? So.
I liked when the guy there who had the shit numbers
yes.
was like, oh, I forgot to factor in the 500 extra people. Well, you know, we could cut down our time if we just got rid of those 500 people.
Yeah, no.
What else was it? The
Has a fact that it's going to take 6 years, because of 500 extra people, so there's 5,000 people instead of 4,500. It's now going to take 3 years and 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. That he does some really bad math.
Yeah.
There was something else that happened. can't remember what. Basically, Hugh Laurie turned the mouthy woman there into the guest liaison.
Yes.
She's now going to be the liaison and talk to the people.
Yep.
And she gave them all this big speech about how she talked them down.
Oh, from 5 years, yeah.
To 3.5. And they were all cheering. Then one guy's like, wait, how did you talk them down if it was going to be 5 years and then they like gave you 3.5? How did you do that? She doesn't understand it either. Like her husband's like, she doesn't understand it. She just got it done. Yeah.
I do like how that one guy called her out. Wait a second. Yeah. If they said it's going to take 5 years, how did you make them have? Why would they take 18 months longer than they needed to?
Right.
Yeah. Excuse me. Do you want to talk about The Outsider? You brought it up, or no?
Sure.
Okay, The Outsider. So this episode was, I don't know. We learned more about the hooded figure.
Yep.
You know, he appears to Ralph's wife.
And in a couple places.
Yep. But basically, he's like, she wants her to relay a warning. If he continues his investigation, he's going to die, you're going to die.
Which was the same warning that he gave to the little girl.
Right. Bad things will happen.
Yeah.
So he's been now warned twice, and he's like, I got to do it.
Why is it only him? There are other people on this investigation. Why is it only him that's getting these warnings?
I don't know. That is true. I didn't even think of that. It
just doesn't seem right.
Seems a little unfair.
Yeah.
Like he's being singled out.
And the guy has the melty face, but I don't know. We got to see a very long, drawn-out scene of him talking to his wife and holding her foot that she cut on the broken glass on her floor.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but man, some of the reviews will talk about like, oh, it was a slow burn. This is barely a warming plate at some times. Like, yeah. It is so slow in places.
Then we go to Holly.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, she thinks that this is a shapeshifter that's killing children.
Mm-hmm.
And then he visits the cemeteries to feed off the suffering of those visiting the graves. Because right. He feeds off not only the death of the children that he's killed, but the suffering of the family members and everyone else by watching them suffer. That's right. You know, we established that earlier, like how after like one of the kid would die, like the rest of the family somehow suffered. They died. They committed suicide. They did violence acts. They had violence acts put upon them or whatever. Right. And so when Ralph goes to one of the Terry's grave there, you can see the barn that, you know, he was hiding out in.
Yep. Right where there. They found his clothes.
Where they found the clothes, yes.
And where that one Lucifer wannabe
yes.
got his little tap on the neck that gave yep. him those blisters.
We meet another character. And I don't know what his name is.
We don't need to.
Yeah, I guess we don't. He's just a friend of one of the victims.
Yep.
The guy that killed himself in the jail, I believe it was.
Yep.
Friend of his. And essentially, he creates a standoff scenario, gets the police around him, and then commits suicide by a police officer.
Yep, with an unloaded gun.
Yep. We find out the gun's unloaded, but he's got those markings or those scars or scabs, whatever you want to call it, that rash on the back of his neck, like yep. that officer does. So yep. he was somehow being infected or controlled somehow by the hooded creature there, the hooded figure.
You know, one of the most believable parts of this show was the fact, I mean, this guy, we saw his death in the beginning. It was one of those 3 days earlier type things. You know, we saw his dead body as the opening scene, and then we got to go back and see it. But after he commits suicide by cop,
yeah.
one of the cops goes, huh, someone should have told him staying home with pills would have been easier. That was the most believable part of this show for me, because
that really was.
Every cop that I've met is yeah. that dick.
Yeah.
You know, that would take somebody like that and be like, huh. Wow, what a scumbag. He wasted our time and his. So
this is true. Yeah, I know people like that.
Yeah.
Holly hooks up with this fella in Dayton, some security officer, and they date, and they apparently have the sex.
Yeah.
And then she leaves.
Yeah, that's been growing over 2 episodes.
Yep, a couple episodes. She leaves the next morning. Her car breaks down. outside of town, mm-hmm. and he finds some notes on the on her investigation. He starts looking into it himself, and then also Jack, that's the cop that has the sores on the back of his neck. He brings the hooded figure, whatever, another deer, and like there's this weird scene where he's going off about a lamp that's been cast off from the pile, and he's like, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with this lamp?" Like, I didn't understand any of that.
That was just bizarre.
I kept waiting for it to establish some sort of weakness, like it had something in the lamp it didn't like, or it affected it in a negative way, like right. chrome or copper or something, but no. But he does offer to help Ralph with his case at the end of the episode.
Yeah, because he seems to have a heart-to-heart with him and said, yeah. I've been having problems. The drinking's not the least of it. But he had a meltdown at the chief lady there. You know, she yeah. was having a party at her house and wanted to introduce people to her baby. And when he got there, she's like, oh, hold my baby. And he's like, no, I got to go. I'm sick. I got
to
go.
And I think he was afraid to hold the baby mm-hmm. because of he knows there's something. He's like infected with something.
Yep.
He didn't want to accidentally infect the baby because he could infect someone, most likely.
Well, not only that, but he's kind of working with a thing that yeah. provokes people to kill children. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's highly offended. Like, throughout this whole episode, this Jack has been made to be like he's an asshole, piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, she has a kinship to him where she's like, and she's like legit offended that he doesn't want to hold her baby.
Yep. Yeah, they seem to have a lot of good history together.
Yes. Thank you. That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah.
You're right. It is a slow-burning series. I do enjoy it, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's they like to take things slow.
Wow. Like lingering on shots and...
Yeah.
Woof.
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Goodbye, bunny.
Yeah. So they go to Hendy's funeral.
Mm-hmm. This is where we learn about the seven totems of Los Angeles.
Yes. What do you have them down?
I do.
Okay.
These are the seven things that once you've seen them, once you've seen all seven, you are an official Los Angelan and can never leave. And so, of course, throughout the episode, we get to see Joe see all of them.
Yeah.
It's a dog in a stroller.
Yep.
Two starlets wearing the same dress.
Yep.
A ghetto bird, which is a police helicopter. A palm tree on fire, and yep. it has to really be on fire. A rollerblader in booty shorts. An off-brand superhero, but not in front of Grohman's Chinese Theater. This yep. has to be, like, legitimately out in the world. And a pack of coyotes, which I'll argue he never saw. He just heard.
Yeah. I agree with that one. Love has... Okay, so we get Love's backstory with her and her deaf husband, who they get married, and then he's apparently sick, and he dies.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see his death. We don't see if she actually killed him, but that, you know... This woman is unstable.
Yes. We saw... Well, first off, we saw her with bangs. She's definitely unstable. So... She, like, in the three flashbacks, we saw her kind of unravel a bit on him.
Yeah.
She wanted kids. He didn't because they didn't have enough money to basically live their lives.
Yep.
And she was like, well, my parents offered to help. And he's like, no, I'm not going to be indebted to your parents. I'm not yep. going to be. And she didn't like that. So basically he was making excuses to not have kids.
And then we find out he's got this fatal illness,
which... All we know is that she said, you know, oh, did you have the test? Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what it was. We don't know how it affected him. We don't know how long he had it, just right. that it existed.
Right. And then he died.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that. I mean, she has, like, we've established that Joe has some issues, and we see them, and we see how he tries to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she seems to have worse issues than he does.
She's very hot or cold.
Yeah, she's bipolar.
Yeah.
Essentially, I would say.
Yeah.
I guess, the way her character is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find out that, all right, so Joe thinks that this guy's following him. And then he sees the guy talking to Love. And he kind of talks to Love about it. And she's like, no, I hired a private investigator to follow Candace.
But it's not just any private investigator.
Sorry, Amy. Amy. Right.
It's a private investigator that she, her family has used many, many times.
Yeah, because so people like to come after us for our money. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. She's very defensive about the money, very defensive about the family stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
meanwhile, Joe's trying to figure out where Candace lives.
Yes.
He wants to have the upper hand. He wants to break into her place and get some dirt. Basically stop her in her tracks.
Because Candace keeps showing up everywhere, obviously, and is trying to ruin his life. And I thought when we saw the part about how he was like, you have no leverage on me, that's why you hanging around, that's why you haven't done anything, she would back off, but she didn't.
Right.
Instead, she goes to his place. And
he goes to her place.
Yep. And was it Delia?
Delilah.
Okay, so thank you. So Delilah basically catches, like, Candace.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, what are you doing? Oh, I was just looking for Will. You know, da-da-da. Okay, well, why? She's like, what's it to you? Well, I'm the building manager.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we used to, she lies, basically.
She says, we were exes, we're exes, and I'm trying to be amicable, but he has these earrings of mine, and I want them back.
These, like, green, dangly earrings. So Delilah goes in to look for him, doesn't let her go in, but while she
Which was cool. You know, she actually said, state law says you can't come in here. Yeah. I can go in, you can't.
So she goes to look for him, and Amy, you know, kind of scuts in the door and unlocks one of the windows and goes back outside.
Yep.
So she leaves, and then Joe goes to Amy's place, and he runs into a dominatrix, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's basically...
Who looks like Amy.
Kind of, yeah.
You know, they look similar.
She's basically renting a room from this woman who is living there. You know, it's not a full Airbnb type thing. And this woman has got him hog-tied and...
Yeah, tied well, because there's books on it.
Stiletto heel right to his face.
Well, it was funny, because initially when we saw her, I just thought he had mistaken Amy for this girl. Like, he had somehow messed up because he was distracted.
Right.
Until she said, no, she's renting a room from me, et cetera, et cetera. But she eventually, like, basically Joe tells her that this was supposed to be a sex game where I would break in and tie her up and pretend to rape her and this and that. And she's just like, oh, honey, you're not ready for something like that, you know, and lets him go.
And she's too vanilla, you know, she's never home and blah, blah, blah. And yeah. Too much too soon, buddy.
Yep. So Candace breaks into the window, Joe's apartment, and Love is sitting there.
Yeah.
Because Love calls the private eye to call things up. He's like, you gotta look at this.
Right, because Joe basically told her, he's like, you know, why are you being so paranoid? Why are you trying to look into this person? You know, it's not worth it. So, yeah, she's going to call it off.
And basically we find out that not only that does Love know about Candace's past, these allegations she made against a guy named Joe, but she was in a sane asylum, if you will, or she was committed for a time in a psych ward.
Mm-hmm.
And Candace basically is like, yeah, you're right. My name's Candace. It's not Amy. But you know what? Will's not named Will. His name is Joe and this and that. And
she tells her that he buried her alive.
Yeah.
And then we cut.
Right. And then we see Joe coming home and Love is there and she makes him like a cake or something. And this is where, like, again, this is where I don't like her. Because it's stupid. Like, this is her way of dealing with this. She doesn't just confront him. She bakes him something, but instead of putting sugar in it, she puts salt. So he bites into it, and he's like, oh, this is terrible. And then she's like, yeah, see?
See what it's like to be lied to?
Yeah. Like, I don't get that. That's just crazy person.
Yeah.
That's crazy person.
Basically, she knows everything now. And he kind of comes clean with her.
Well, yeah, he tells you, yeah, you're right. Yeah, my name really is Joe. I did date Amy a long time ago. However, she's crazy. She made these lies up. I ran away and changed my mind to get away from her, hopefully she wouldn't find me.
What about this Gwendolyn Beck?
I don't remember what his response was.
Oh, he said, I dated her once. We had one date. We never saw each other again.
And made it bigger in her mind. That's right. Yeah,
Candace tried to make it huge, and then blamed me for this and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. He had answers, and they weren't the most honest, but...
Well, but to Love, they were believable.
Mm-hmm.
And so she basically is like, hugs him, and is like, ugh.
And he tells her that, you know, he's never felt love like this before. And she said, neither have I. That's what makes this so hard.
Yeah, we're through.
Yeah.
And she walks off. Joe goes to turn in his apron, and Forty's like, ah, don't worry about it, man. You don't have to quit your job. Keep your job. Still work here. Just kind of stay clear for more. It'll be fine.
And then, in true 40 fashion, says, are you one of those self-hating Jews? And he goes, what? And he goes, well, your name's Joe Goldberg. That's a great producer name. Will Bettelheim? Sounds like a Nazi. And I was just like,
yep, that 40? Seems like a 40 thing.
Yep. Now, don't forget, we've also got the B story, which is Delilah and her sister. And Delilah and Ellie are having issues because Ellie just wants to put this all behind him. But Delilah is obsessed. The world has to know that Henderson was a scumbag.
Right.
Can't let him get away with this. Cannot, you know, this has to be told. The world has to know. And
Ellie's like, what's it matter at this point? He's dead.
Yeah. So Delilah's just going nuts, and she's being a real jerk. So Joe's been trying to calm things and be there for Ellie. And so then after Love and him break up, he goes down to see Delilah.
Well, this is what's hilarious to me. When he comes home from work and Ellie's storming out, she's like, you need to do something with her. Yeah. And it's like, I'm like, how's it his responsibility? And this girl's mind, is this guy's responsibility to fix his sister?
Yeah. So he goes in there and he gives her the best fixin' he knows how, which is
brown chicken, brown cow.
Two of them just fuck. And she doesn't seem like afterwards. He's like, look, why don't you tell your story? You know, you were molested by Henderson. It would be true. It would be honest. You wouldn't have to track down people, and then other people will come forward. And it seemed legitimate and heartfelt. And then she like went, oh, did you just mansplain and demean me in the same sentence? Get the fuck out.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah. Now,
there is some, realistically, there's too many intense fucking bipolar characters on this show.
Yes. Yes. Now, I thought this was very interesting. So, we saw the start of the conversation between Love and Candace.
Yes.
Then we saw Joe come home and talk to Love about this.
Yeah.
And he asked her what happened, and she just said, I made her go away with a lot of money and threats. That was it. It was just left at that
point. Yeah, it's true. We don't know. She could have killed her.
She could very easily have killed her. We don't know what the aftermath was. We don't know what the fallout was. She could have hired somebody to take her away and dump the body. Don't know. Yeah. I think that's going to come back.
I think it has to come back, yeah. I don't think that Amy was just – Candace would just go away.
No. Not for money or threats. She wants to make Joe suffer for what he did.
Yes.
Or it could be the opposite. It could be that her and Love are going to work together to destroy Joe.
Which is, you said, a possibility.
Yep. What else you got?
I don't know if do we want to just keep going with these shows that we've watched one episode each of, like the October Faction, I mean.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go ahead.
So we start off with some flashbacks. And once again, you know, we get multiple flashbacks through here. Fred and Dolores, when they were in high school, first time they got together, they weren't a normal matchup. But
no, they weren't.
They kind of teamed up to take on the monster that killed Dolores' dad.
Who was the town sheriff.
Yep. Yep. So we get to see how their relationship blossomed in the beginning, or at least how they came together, which was nice.
Real quick.
Yeah.
This has been bothering me.
Sure.
Fred, the actor, how old does he look, his character? Like 60s?
I would have said like 50.
Okay, he's 49, but he just looks so old to me. And his wife, or the actress, Tamara Taylor, who plays Dolores, she's the same age as him. But he just, but he looks so much older. It's just...
He does.
Yeah. He doesn't look to me like he's the kind of guy who's in shape and can kick someone's ass.
Right.
Anyway, sorry.
He kind of has an Ed Begley Jr. thing going.
Yeah. Yes.
Lanky, nerdy. Yeah. So both kids are trying to fit in at school. both failing miserably. I liked how Jeff kind of went off on the teacher who was giving him shit. Like, the teacher was riding him a bit. And
yeah.
It's like, he goes off on him. Yeah, that's why your wife's fucking some other guy. And
yeah, and you did nothing about it. But it's almost like he didn't know what he was saying. He got in some sort of weird trance. And
yeah.
And then, like, the daughter having the Ouija board experiment, seeing the flashes, being trapped with the girl underwater. And then we find Fred finds on the floor of his brother's room when he's cleaning it out, like, I'm not going to say a pentagram, but some sort of, you know, symbol.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know.
Something you would have seen in Supernatural.
Yes. And he's kind of, and I,
with some holes that look like they were for shackle bolts.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a part, I thought I heard him talking about there was an issue with, is this what's causing the twins to have the premonitions and the reactions they're having ever since they kind of came back to town.
Mm.
I thought the kids would have known by now about what the parents actually did.
Yeah, I'm surprised that.
I wonder if we'll get that sooner than later, or they're going to drag that out.
I mean, the parents said it in the first episode. They're like, you know, I don't want this for them, but we kind of got to let them know.
Yeah.
Because we saw that they were this age when they were taking on monsters in high school.
Yes.
So. But yeah, both the kids are not popular. Like,
nope.
The popular girls are going after Viv and basically, you know, making it their mission to make her life miserable. I really like her new friend in art class.
Kat?
Yeah, I like Kat. Kat's me a too. Cool shit.
We used to be friends with one of the popular girls until something happened. Like,
yeah.
You know, they got older and whatever.
Classic.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's boobs grew in and somebody kissed somebody else's boyfriend. It'll be one of those, you know, classic things.
Yeah.
Jeff gets railed on by the popular guy there, like, treats him like a dick at lunch. Like, he kind of pulls him in close, you know, like he's going to be friends. No, that was really cool what you did. Yeah, how'd you know about that? Were you the one fucking his wife? What the hell's wrong with you? You know, just basically giving him a bunch of shit.
And then he calls him for being gay and questions what kind of gay person is he? Are you kind of homo that does this, that, or whatever?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we get the classic dude standoff,
yep.
You know, where they both stand up and stand in each other's faces and forget you, man. Yeah. The police are investigating because Dolores' car was seen at the supermarket.
Yep. Well, it was, yeah. And they basically surmised they were out back smoking a joint.
Yep. Yep. It was old weed.
Yep. And the sheriff, like, knows who they are. It's like old high school friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, all right, well, here's the thing. You better not be driving that car. It's not registered. It's not inspected. It's uninsured. It's not roadworthy, road legal, whatever it is.
Yep.
That was one of her biggest concerns.
Yeah. And then we have the mysterious woman who kind of came up from the bottom of the lake in the first episode.
Yeah. Well, okay. So
she shows up at the bookstore.
This is not the same woman that was in the well. Correct?
No, this is the same woman that was.
It is the same woman. Okay. Well, because she goes to the jail and tells that kid, the one that killed. I think it's two different shows at the moment.
You might be. She starts off by going to the bookstore where there are two people who are agents.
Hold on a second. Yes, you're right. But what is the show I'm watching where the parent, the dad's dead and the kids are at?
Lock and Key.
Fucking Lock and Key. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just merged those two points in my brain real quick, and I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, we'll get to that one. Anyway.
Yes. All right. Keep going. All right. Yes.
She goes to the bookstore, and there's two people there that seem like normal people, and she's asking them for, like, where she can go, and then she shows she has red eyes. They both pull guns on her, and she, like, just puts her hand up in the air and stops them both, then makes them face each other and shoot each other in the gut. Not even headshots, gut shots, so that they writhe and bleed out.
Yeah. And, like, well.
And then she knows right where to access the computer, goes in there, and finds out where Fred and family are.
Yes.
So that she can go there. There was a really cool, like, she ends up showing up in front of the school bus. Viv's been having those weird visions. She's been drawing stuff.
Yes.
She ended up drawing the red truck that this woman was driving that pulled in front of the bus and stopped. And then the woman basically stopped time, like everything was frozen, and she came and got on the bus, and she was going to do something to the twins, and then she, like, recognized something in Viv, like she went to touch her, and she, like, and then took off.
And then it's almost like from the Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, where you see Flash is running and everyone's frozen in time, but then Superman, his eyes move and his head turns. You almost kind of get that as well, where the twins seem to be looking at her, but we can't tell. But then they don't acknowledge they saw her or saw anything when she disappears.
Yep. And then, you know, to almost nobody's surprise, we get a shot at the end that shows, you know, Presidio, the organization that they work for.
Yep.
And, oh, Grandpa's alive.
Yeah.
I'm still really enjoying the show.
I am too, actually.
Yep.
I'm excited to watch another episode.
Me as well.
I'm glad we're not binging them, because I talked to a couple other people, like, oh, we're going to binge it this weekend. It's like, yeah.
But see, then everything bleeds together like Lock and Key.
Yeah, because Lock and Key and October Faction really bled together for me there for a second. Want to just talk about Lock and Key then?
Tell us about Lock and Key.
All right. So essentially,
first off, I got to say, I hate the kids. I want to punch each one of them in the throat.
Yeah, there's nothing really redeeming about them.
Nope.
Basically, this guy gets a phone call. Someone tells him someone's dead. So he takes out a key and then drives it into his chest, which then sets – which then he kind of catches on fire from the inside out and explodes in the house. He catches on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why.
I suppose we'll find out eventually, but
yeah. So then we meet the Locke family. It's a mom and three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the course of the episode, we find out that the husband was – Rendell there was murdered.
Mm. An accidental murder, but
– Well, okay. So I'll just cut to it. Basically, we see it kind of – they talk about through the whole episode like they –
I'm glad they didn't drag this out for the whole season.
Exactly. You know, we meet Rendell's brother, one of the twins there. I can't think of his name.
Oh, yeah. One of the – just had it on the tip of my tongue. Ashmore.
Yeah, one of the Ashmore twins. Yeah. There.
And it doesn't matter which one it is.
No, it doesn't. So basically, the mom and the kids moved to this town in Massachusetts.
Which, one of my notes, I had to put it down because they pulled over in town and it seems like a quaint little town.
Yeah.
There was a store that was a salt shaker store.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they sold. That was their primary source of income, was salt shakers.
Well, I mean, you know, everyone needs one.
Oh, and the first thing that I thought of, Mike would go to that store.
I would.
Probably, yeah. Mike would go in there and he would be like, these are cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to buy a shelf and I'm going to start a collection of salt shakers.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I think you would.
I don't know. I don't.
Because if they had lighthouses, you'd have to get a lighthouse.
Well, no, see, that's the thing is, like, people, I'm not like fucking the doorkeeper who likes everything frogs, you know, like.
No.
I enjoy lighthouses. I don't really collect anything lighthouses, but I don't want generic lighthouses. I just want lighthouses I've been to.
Right.
And I like, you know. So anyhow, basically what happens is we see that oldest son, one of his buddies, apparently shows up at the house. His dad's a teacher.
This is a flashback.
This is the flashback. Yeah, dad's a teacher. Kid goes in the house, evidently locked the door behind him, and just talking to the Rendell, and he's like, you need to tell me about the key house, or the lock house, whatever it is.
Key house.
And he's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about, what you've heard, but we're not talking about that. You know, we're, nope, nothing's happening. So the guy pulls a gun. The kid pulls a gun, and he threatens him with the gun, and he basically doesn't respond. He's just like, no, I'm not telling you anything. You don't know what you're talking about. You're mistaken. Mm-hmm. So the kid turns and shoots mom. Shoots her in the leg, no less, but still shoots her, which knocks her through the stained glass piece she's working on. So then him and dad wrestle over the gun, and he shoots dad and kills him, basically. And son's outside and hears the gunshot and he's trying to get in the house and the door's locked. I think he has a lacrosse stick or a hockey stick.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to bust the door to get it in. We don't see what else happens. There is another flashback later on where the sister's talking about how, you know, the final girl isn't always brave and strong. Sometimes she's afraid and just trying not to make any noise so she can survive. Because we see her and her little brother where they're kind of hiding and it's assuming it's the guy that just killed dad and shot mom's walk around looking for them for some reason.
Right.
While big brother's outside trying to force his way into the house.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happens beyond that, but that's how dad died.
I'm sure we're going to get more flashbacks.
Yeah, I'm sure. And then we know this guy's in jail. So they go to this house and the little boy's looking around, and he stumbles across this old well.
God, I want to kill this little kid.
He's not as annoying as the kid from Manifest, though.
No, absolutely not. But he's like 10, 11, 12 years old. You know, he's in
he's that old.
That precocious age.
Yeah. I think he's younger than that.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. But he stumbles across this well, and essentially he's talking into it, and a girl responds.
Are you my echo? And he hears this female voice. Yes.
Yes, I am. And so he talks to her. And then eventually he talks to her more often, and she tells him about the house. You know, there's keys everywhere. You know, you can open a door. It'll take you anywhere. And she basically tells him, and at the same time us, what the house is. Huh? How there's these locks, and there's keys hidden everywhere. And that they'll call to you and talk to you.
Yeah, and one of the keys is that key that'll take you anywhere you want to go.
Yes, and another key takes you into the mirror universe.
Yeah.
We'll get home on that. So I guess older sister's taking a shower, and the kid looks at her bracelet, which was a present from her dad, and he recognizes that this is the key that'll take you anywhere because it's got the 6 golden loops on it.
Convenient.
Yes. So he takes the bracelet apart and uses the key to go to the ice cream shop.
Right. He basically closes the door, says he wants to go to the ice. He wants ice cream.
Yeah.
Puts the key in. You hear a clank, 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 and opens up the door, and it's a door to the ice cream store.
He walks in the front door of the ice cream shop, gets an ice cream. He's like, that'll be $3. And he's like, hold on. And he walks out the door and back in his room and shuts. And he's like, I stole some ice cream.
Yeah.
So the first thing he does with his mystical power is theft.
Yeah. Theft of ice cream, no less. It wasn't like a bank. Like, he could have used that on a bank vault.
Well, here's the thing. The sister comes out of the bed, out of the shower, and she's like, what are you doing in my room still? Did you break my bracelet? Where'd you get that ice cream? You know, and sister's kind of friends with the ice cream shop guy. And when they...
Flirting with.
Yeah, but still, they go meet up later on with some of his friends in this, I guess, AV club.
Came to have lunch with her.
Yeah. He never mentions, hey, your brother just randomly came into the shop by himself and stole an ice cream. Like, he doesn't mention that.
Yeah.
But he tries to show his sister, and she doesn't see it.
Well, she's like, fine, take me to the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
So he can't do it.
She doesn't see it. It doesn't work for her.
Just opens to a closet.
Later on, he finds another key in the garbage disposal.
Yeah.
And he uses it on this door with a mirror on it because the echo tells him that you can use it to... talk to the dead or talk to anyone. She tricks him, basically. She's lying this whole time. Because at first we don't see her, we just see her voice. And then now the next time we actually see her talking up to him. Mm-hmm. And then the little boy tries to use the key on the door of the mirror, but then like a keyhole opens up in the mirror, he puts it in there. And he touches the mirror, but then he backs away because he recognizes, hey, this is dangerous. And then mom shows up, sees her reflection in the mirror, and the mirror of reflections waving her in, and she just walks in.
Yeah.
And then we see when she touches one of the other mirrors, it shatters and breaks, and now she's lost in there. So she runs to go get help from Echo, and Echo basically somehow got out because mom got in. I don't understand that part. She suddenly appears out of the well, but doesn't explain how the well and that mirror was connected. And then he gives her the golden looped key, and she uses it on the side door and just leaves.
Yeah.
And abandons him there.
Like, see you later, kid.
And basically tells him, yeah, well, I tricked you. Now your mom's trapped in there because that's where I was trapped.
Yep.
So this kid apparently is a genius because he grabs a rope to go tie himself off to go in and get her. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. He somehow figured out, oh, well, you know,
I don't want to get trapped in there as well. This will be my lifeline.
Yeah, which is weird because it doesn't matter. It's not like Echo told him that he'd have to do that.
Right.
So brother and sister show up finally. They see mom trapped in there. Brother sees himself, Echo, you know, saying, come here. So they tie the rope around the older brother. He goes in. He closes his eyes and is able to rescue mom. And they get out of the mirror thing. And the kid takes the key out. And they're like, oh, my God, what happened? And all of a sudden, mom, like, seems to understand this happened. And then in an instant, oh, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, she forgot everything somehow.
Yeah, so somehow she can't see, maybe because she's not blood related to the box. I don't know.
Maybe.
But she just doesn't remember any of it, but the kids do. And that, of course, is going to establish, you know, the story of it.
Yeah. Boy, was I thrilled to find out that the kids are going to be the heroes of this story.
Well, that was established before we watched the show.
Yeah.
And then Echo shows up to meet the kid in prison.
Mm-hmm. That's what you were thinking.
Yeah, she's like, I told you I'd come to see you. And he's like, hee. So somehow he knew about her, knew about the lock house, you know, key house, knew about all this stuff, even though they were in Seattle, Washington, or over in Oregon or wherever they were, you know, across the country.
If she was trapped, you know, inside a mirror world, maybe she spoke to him through a mirror.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out how that all came about.
Mm-hmm. It's a good show.
I enjoyed the first episode.
Yep.
I actually wanted to watch the next one, but I didn't. So
now you have something to look forward to.
I do like Nina. Is Nina the mom? Yeah, Kinsey. Kinsey's the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I do like her friends because they like to sit around and watch old movies. And, you know, it's like, yep, I can get behind that group right there. What you got?
Well, we've got Doctor Who.
Yep.
We've got Flash. We've got Legends.
I watched Arrow.
Oh, yeah.
We watched the last episode of Arrow.
Yeah.
On the Doctor Who side of things, I did not watch last night's episode. Like okay. I told you, we're recording on Monday the 10th. I was exhausted and I dozed off after dinner. But I did watch last week's episode. So if you want to talk about that, we can.
Praxeus?
Yeah, Praxeus there. It's an alien spread of disease that somehow attacks plastics, and our bodies are full of microplastics. And this was really, like I messaged you, it's like this was kind of a preachy, hey, we're destroying the earth, people, with our use of plastics and everything. It was,
Yeah. It was creepy. Like,
yeah.
Like the stuff that grew on their skin, like it really, for some reason, gave me the heebies.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was about it, but it was like those little rocks that were kind of growing out of their skin.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole premise was some scientist came from a planet that was destroyed by this virus that attacks plastic.
And
it feeds off it, basically.
Yeah.
And so it was infecting humans, and the scientist wasn't trying to stop it, was just trying to study it, and doctor wasn't having any of that.
Yeah, because the doctor's like, essentially, she used Earth as a giant petri dish.
Yeah.
To try and find a cure for their planet. But even though you're humanoid, you're still not Earthlings or humans, so you don't...
Yeah.
May not work for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but it was another one like Orphan 52 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Where you basically... It's like... There's so much plastic. You've been ingesting so much plastic that it's in your bodies and you've got all these microplastics. Okay. Chibnall, relax.
Yeah.
We get it. I mean, kudos to you, but like tone it down a little bit. Doesn't have to be quite so overt.
I mean, other than that, it was a good Doctor Who episode.
Yeah. This week's episode, I will tell you, was a Monster of the Week one. And
oh, nice.
It was pretty fun.
You watched it, I take it?
Yep. Yep, it was pretty fun.
So we have four episodes with last night's. And I was looking that the two-part finale is not on the same night. So I may wait for both episodes and watch them both at once.
The Ascension of the Cybermen and
oh my God.
The Timeless Children.
I know, the Timeless Children and these. I just love the titles.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of this one, it said one more episode until the chilling season finale. Yeah.
Which seems like already.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we got to see, you know, all the companions kind of doing their own thing more, working independently but while working together, mm-hmm. you know, between the three locations. Was it Madagascar and Peru and I can't think of the other location we had.
I can't either.
But still, I mean, it was...
I'm doing the bleeding thing where I'm thinking of last night's episode.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But it was just kind of cool how we do see, like, you know, they were working more independently this time around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just enjoy the hell out of
it. The doctor even mentions that. She's like, oh, look at you going off on your own and not getting killed. Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. I just enjoy the hell out of it. I'm a little upset, though, because we introduced the new doctor...
And nothing.
And then nothing.
Yep.
No mention. Was there any mention of her last night's Monster of the Week? See, I didn't think so either. So I'm guessing she comes back in this finale, I would have bet.
That's my guess. Or maybe not even until the next season, because that's the way Doctor Who works sometimes.
That is true. That is how Doctor Who works at times.
I will say that I watched the next episode of Sex Education. Still a really solid show. Still really enjoying it. They just got renewed for their third season today.
I did watch the first couple episodes of season two.
Nice.
So yeah, it is a good show.
Yeah.
It's if I remember correctly, which is going to be weird to say this, but in the first season, there was a lot of focus on Gillian Anderson's character. Mm-hmm. And even though she's working at the school in this so far, it's not as much focus on her, more focus on him and the students and yep. their sexual issues. So
yes. Yeah. And watching the two of them, like in the most recent episode that I watched, there's a girl who comes to realize that she's kind of asexual.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't want to have sex with anybody. She's like, I just don't. I have no desire to have sex with anybody. And she ends up talking to Gillian Anderson's character yep. rather than her son. So it's interesting. I'll also say this, because like you said, there wasn't a lot on, so I was able to catch up on some stuff. And I caught up on something that I've been meaning to catch up on.
Sure.
Which was the fourth season of The Magicians. Finally on Netflix.
Yeah. Did you watch the whole thing? Or
I did.
Oh, okay.
Gladly. Like, I know that I've said it in the past. I'll say it again. I fucking love this show. This is such a good show. And last season, season three, they had that one episode, the musical episode, where they, at the end, they did the rousing... Under Pressure by Queen.
Yes.
And it was just so well done. This season, they had a couple different episodes that featured them singing. And it was awesome. I will say one of the main characters, like, legitimately died. Like, they've had some characters that have died, but they do the multiverse kind of thing.
Yep.
One of the main characters legitimately died, and I cannot remember the last time I saw a honorarium at the end of an episode for someone like that. Like, he didn't die in real life.
Okay, that's safe. So, like, the actor died?
No.
Okay.
But the character did, and he has this moment where he goes to the underworld, and they're, like, getting him ready, and he's like, I just want to know that, you know, I did good, that I helped the people that... And the guy's like, well, let's go take the deluxe package then. And he gets to see the people that he helped and the things that he did. Huh. And it's all of them are remembering him while singing Take On Me.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good song. Dude, it was like, seriously, like my eyes were watering up. I was having a hard time with this. And the funny thing is, like, I knew that this happened. Like, I had seen last year when this episode aired that they were like, oh, saying goodbye to so-and-so. And I'm like, damn it, that's a spoiler. So I knew this was coming.
Yeah.
It still fucking kicked me in the heart. It was good. It was so good. Dude, it really, like, even now I'm getting a little choked up thinking about it. The fifth season's on TV now. There's been like four episodes on Sci-Fi. Honestly, like, if people like some of the shows that we've been talking about, you know, the supernaturals, the fantastical type stuff, you want to see some magic in the real world that is just so bizarre and has a lot to do with sex at times, check out The Magicians. Four seasons on Netflix right now. 13 episodes per season. They're 42 minutes long. It's fucking great. The show legitimately, it started off like a little weird, and it just got better and better and better. By the end of the first season, I was like, I need to see everything that's happening. And yeah, I will always give The Magicians a hard sell. So there.
I watched Flash.
Mm.
You had told me last Thursday when we went to dinner, you had told me that about the new openings, and I watched Legends first and I watched Flash, and yeah, they do have new openings. Legends is wicked campy and fits it, and Flash is similar but more serious at least.
Yep.
But yeah, this was a good episode.
Yeah.
It's their first episode back from Crisis and mm-hmm. how they dealt with stuff. And, you know, Barry, of course, is having guilt issues over Oliver's death and could he have done something else.
So basically disappears for the whole episode.
Well, Diggle shows up and he's got, like, he wants to give Barry the mask. Mm-hmm. You know, well, Oliver left you something and it was the first mask that Oliver had that Barry had given him. And there was, like, some... It's not
a particular residue.
Some residue from the super soldier serum on it. And so he's convinced that it's a code and a secret. And Diggle kind of reluctantly goes with him to Liang Yu so they can search for things. So yeah, Mary's
being... Okay, hold on. That was awesome. Because we all know that Diggle always gets sick when he gets sped around. Oh,
yes.
And Barry's like, I mean, a flight's going to take like 16 hours. Yeah. Diggle's like, hold on. And he like downs some Dramamine. He's like, do it.
And Barry's like, that's a little too much, but oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think my favorite part of the episode, though, is at the beginning with Sisko.
Mm.
Because Sisko's like, basically, he sums up what's happened. You know, Black Lightning's in our Earth Prime. Now, all these Earths became one, and Black Lightning's here, and Supergirl and Superman are here, and Batwoman's here, and all our metas that we had captured, they're all loose again. And he throws this binder down, which is a trading card set he made of all the bad guys, basically.
I want those cards.
I do, too. It's hilarious. And he goes, and what's worse is, I don't even remember buying this t-shirt. And he rips his shirt open. He's got a Superman t-shirt on.
Yep.
I thought that was fantastic.
But the cool thing about that is that by his own admission and then what we saw in the episode,
yeah,
all the metas are different now.
Yes.
Like, well, they don't all have to be different, but some of them have different powers. Some of them are just different people.
Yeah.
Like we saw a different version of Dr. Light in this one.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't their friendly neighborhood Dr. Light who was the young woman. This was an older woman,
yep,
who is working for Black Hole as an assassin. And she can harness the power of light to
make black holes.
Make black holes, yeah, using that gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a very Iris and Scooby Gang centric episode.
Yeah, that's, I didn't really care for that.
No. But we got the new Dr. Light. We, yep, got what looks like a new Mirror Master.
Yeah.
That's really
basically cool. There's a bad guy. The one, his company at first alleges that they're using stolen tech from his company, and then Iris figures out that he's actually the mastermind behind Black Hole, and of course confronts him and kind of blackmails him, like, you need to cancel your charges against me, your lawsuit, and you need to, you know that if anything happens to me, I've made a dead man's key, and blah 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 blah. And he kind of blames his wife, who's disappeared. So
Eva.
Yeah, so Iris goes, checks out Eva's office, and there's a giant mirror. She gets pulled into the mirror.
Because, you know, the office is AV3.
Yeah.
Which, if you look in a mirror, that's Eva.
Eva, yeah.
Yeah, she gets pulled into a mirror. Apparently, we're going to have an answer to that very quickly.
Oh, good.
I read online, they said that they're taking a graphic novel approach this season.
Yeah.
Which is basically half the season is dedicated to this, half the season is dedicated to this. So that they can portray more metas, more compelling stories, and not just have like one entire long season that's all one villain.
It reminds me of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they did three different seasons, three different stories.
Yes. Yep.
And Sisko's having issues and decides he's going to leave the team so he can go work on cataloging all the new metas.
Yep. He's not gone for good, by the way.
No.
But... yeah, because as far as he knows, this is it. There's just one Earth.
Yeah.
We all know, you know, as fans, that there are still other Earths out,
right,
there,
yeah,
that contain the other DC things. But, you know, Harry and Jesse are presumed dead.
Yeah.
Because they were on Earth too. But as we've seen, well, as I've seen in Batwoman and Supergirl, there's bleed over where, yeah, different people have, well, showed up from other.
And we saw Nash's having the photo of him and his daughter together.
And his daughter is
Jesse, but it's
no, it's the,
that's right, it's
the Ultraviolet girl.
Yes, it's Ultraviolet. Yeah, not Jesse, but it's Ultraviolet. So that's his daughter.
Yep.
And there, she's in adventure gear as well, like he is.
So it's probably not the one from this Earth. It's just another one.
Yeah.
Killer Frost is now just Frost.
It's Frost.
Just Frost.
She makes a point of saying that it's just Frost now.
And they can't use the breaching discs anymore because now that the universe has been messed up and they assume there's no more multiverse, it the tech's all wonky and they can't breach, yep, anywhere. So that was a good way to put that. And they didn't have Ralph. That kind of bummed me out. Their first,
yeah,
episode back.
No Ralph. Yeah.
So Sisko's not Vibe again anymore.
No.
That's, no, kind of weird.
It's like he got his powers back for Crisis only. And now he doesn't have them again.
Yeah. They said, they told, what's his name there? Nash, to go take a vacation. They said, yeah, Gorilla City's now on this Earth. You could go see them. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
And then apparently when they were showing the map of the different places on the world, one of the places is, it had some fancy name, but we would all know it as Dinosaur Island.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So that now exists on this Earth. I tell you, Crisis was cool, what it gave us afterwards is even better, because they essentially got to do what DC did all those years ago and hit the reset button and say, yep, okay, now we're going to change things up.
I appreciated it.
Yep.
So Arrow.
Yes.
Final episode ever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's funny because we got flashbacks in Arrow, you know, to like when John and Arrow and Oliver first met up and everything. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the crisis event was affected here. You know, Tommy's back. The mom's not dead. Oliver's other sister is there.
Yep.
At the end.
Yep.
Or is it daughter? Sister.
Sister. Yeah, his half-sister, Kimiko.
Yeah. She's there. We see...
Captain Lance is alive.
We got to see him come back. That was cool. Laurel has a moment where she's like, you know, because I'm here, your daughter didn't come back. And Lance is like, nah, you're my daughter.
Yeah.
Cut the shit out. You know, like, you're my daughter. You're where you're supposed to be. And he hugs her. And,
yep.
We see...
Both of Ra's al Ghul's daughters.
Yeah, Nyssa and Talia.
Yep.
What I liked a lot about that is when we have Oliver's kind of funeral at the end with the unveiling of the... I'll be honest, the whole Oliver's son getting kidnapped and that whole bullshit, I hated all that. Yeah. I didn't care at all about it. You know,
didn't need to be.
Seeing... I liked Sarah showing up to get Oliver's daughter to bring her back to... you know, back to the funeral. I like Felicity showing up. But that whole, you know, William getting kidnapped and the backstory behind why, and then all of his daughter, like, not killing the guy. Just seeing her tiny waif of a girl in that uniform, in that outfit, just made me, like, she's not a believable superhero. She's 5 foot tall and 100 pounds soaking wet. Like, that's...
You seen Willa Holland?
Yeah, I know. I'm just...
Well, Speedy and Roy are going to get married now.
That was the thing. Like, they kind of, they definitely shored everything up, you know, as far as, like you said, Speedy and Roy are going to get married, and, you know, Felicity is there, and apparently she decides to go to the afterlife and live with Oliver forever, because she's like, fuck it, my kids are older now, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, I can see they're okay, bye.
But I really, you know, I like that they brought back everyone, they all said goodbye, we had these great tear-jerking moments, and then, you know, Diggle is the fucking Green Lantern.
Yeah. Okay. So we're half expecting. So we got that little tease there.
Yes.
When he showed up on Flash and he walks, I was like, yes, yeah.
I was disappointed, but yeah.
So apparently this must have happened before he found that ring. Because I can't imagine he would have been like,
I would assume.
I can't tell Barry about this.
I loved the fact that we're getting like that wrap up music and the montages of everything, and they're wrapping everything up, and everyone's being put to bed, and Diggle and his wife and his two kids are gonna move. You know, they're moving out of their house, and everyone's going great, and da da da. And then, hey, what's that? Oh, something just crashed on the Earth. Oh my God!
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Green glow. You're like, yeah,
yeah. That was unexpected.
Yeah. That was a cool moment. And we know that HBO has the series coming of Green Lantern.
Yes.
They're going to be two different Green Lanterns in there. I can almost guarantee you that they will not have John Diggle in.
Oh, probably not.
You know, I yeah.
Well, why would they, Kate? This still pisses me off, because we have Crisis on Infinite Earths just wrapped up, just it saved DC's cinematic universe, saved mm-hmm. DC's TV universe. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to do a new TV property that's unrelated.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
well, they're already doing that on their DC streaming service. You know, they've got Doom Patrol, they've got Titans,
but they're all wrapped into this. We saw that.
But they have their own Earths. Remember?
Right, but
they're still listed as
their own Earths. Yes, they have their own Earths, but they've wrapped them all into the same universe. Yes. You know?
Well, we saw a Green Lantern universe.
Yes.
So.
But I thought it was going to be the new HBO show when we saw that.
Yeah.
But then why the fuck has Diggle got the ring now? See, like, now you're fracturing it again.
Yeah, but see, we all know that there could be multiple Green Lanterns.
And if that could be a Green Lantern on a different Earth, the one we saw, and then now Diggle's going to be Green Lantern on this Earth somehow.
Yeah.
What show will he be on, though?
I don't think he will. I think it was just like a cool nod to the fans.
Left it ambiguous?
Yeah. And they're both just like, here you go, fans.
Legends.
Fucking great show.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Not much else you can say about it.
No, there isn't.
We really can, but, you know, Legends is just great. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. So, we get to see what happened to Zari in Crisis.
Yeah, she's a social media personality, essentially.
Oh, that's nice. I called her a vapid Insta-celeb.
Yep, sure, same thing.
Yeah, she's got her little followers around her, and she does her little, hi,
hey gang, what's going on?
And then she, like, tosses the phone and says, okay, make sure that gets uploaded at such and such time, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Bayrod, you know, takes, what's his name there, Nate home,
yep,
because he doesn't want to have a family dinner, you know, alone, and, Nate sees Zari and he's like, oh my God, that's the girl from the message. And she said she loves me. And apparently the family thinks the wind totem is lost.
Yes.
Because Nate sees a big painting of somebody in their family. And he goes, oh, is that the wind totem? Well, how do you know about that? Oh, Bayrod told me. Yeah, I bet he did. Yeah, that's been lost for a long time. We don't know where it is. Bayrod's kind of like, oop, cover that up. It's on my wrist.
Yep.
And then Zari kind of tries to seduce Nate into telling her what's really going on with the wind totem and
Bayrod because she doesn't believe him.
Yep.
Yep.
Their story was kind of fun.
I mean, the episode ends with
Zari's going to go tell her parents.
Yeah. And so they open up the portal and she walks onto the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And now everyone sees her, but no one knows who she is. Because it's not like everyone saw and recognized, oh, we know who that is. Only Nate knows who she is.
Right.
Even then, he's, yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't know fully who she is.
Right.
Just that, yeah.
So that'll be something interesting to see what happens.
Yep. So then the other story. we're dealing with Constantine looking for the lost souls.
Yep.
He goes down to hell. And talks to his, you know, former protege. Now she's basically running hell.
Yep.
She's made a lot of money. And so she owns these soul shits.
Yeah.
And so they can't die while they're up there.
She releases them up on Earth. And every person they kill, she gets that person's soul. So it's like, you know, a Ponzi scheme, pyramid scheme.
Exactly. Yep. So this time it was Bugsy Malone.
Yep.
He was supposed to have been gunned down by his rivals. This time he didn't die. And she actually gave him a hellfire gun.
Yep.
Which shoots out green ghostly bullets that seek out and home in on people. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So the team goes down to figure out why he's still alive. And we get Ava dealing with the fact that she used to run a federal or whatever. She ran the Time Bureau. She had a very important job running the Time Bureau. You know, very important person, mucky muck. And now she's nothing. Now she's relegated to, you know, quarterbacking the ship with Rory, who's like, that means we sit around and do nothing.
Yeah.
And he's okay with his station in this group, and Ava is not. No,
because it's not that she wants to be in charge necessarily. It's that she feels like nobody needs her. She was always so needed, and now nobody needs her.
Yeah. And her and Rory go down because they have to now stake out the nightclub, the speakeasy, whatever.
While the other team is doing the full-on
old
gangster noir thing. You know, John takes on an American accent.
Yeah.
Ray's pretending to be a cop, and Sarah's the secretary.
And, they get drunk, and then she's got to make a distraction. So she gets up and she starts singing, and we get this awesome, like, her and her backup singer in the band, they're doing Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison. It sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's singing her heart out. It's great.
And my first thought is, how did that band learn that song?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
exactly.
How did she know the
lyrics? Where did she get these backup singers?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to reality, where it's her singing horrifically into the microphone by herself with no backup.
Yeah.
And Rory filming it.
And everybody clearing out of the club because they're just...
because it's so terrible and they're running away. Bugsy shows back up and eventually they capture Bugsy. John takes him back to hell. He's going to use the Hellfire gun to kill Astra or whatever.
Because it has one bullet left.
No, it has five. He uses four of them, like, on his way down there, killing other people. Oh, yeah. And then he can't do it because he hasn't given up on her yet, so he uses it on Bugsy.
Yep.
And then when he gets back up, he lies and says that. He's got away from me. Gun's gone.
Yep.
So. But, yeah, the whole bit with her singing Love of Dose Poison was excellent.
Because you're right. It was such a great number in the beginning, and you're like, wow, she's really good. And then reality kicks in, and you go, oh, she's drunk.
Yeah. It's like, that's why I like this show so much.
Yeah.
It's just done so well. And they get away. They can get away with anything. They literally can get away with anything at this point, and it's awesome.
Yep.
I mean, if the rest of the Arrowverse shows ended and they just kept going with this one, I would be happy with it.
I would as well.
This is absolutely my favorite one of all of them.
Yep.
Any other shows for you?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine came back. Two episodes. Still love this show. Still a great, solid half-hour comedy. Yeah, that's it for me for shows. What about you?
Well, done shows, for the most part. I watched a few movies.
As did I. What'd you watch?
Did you go to the theater or anything?
Yeah.
See, I did not.
Okay.
So the wife and I watched Troop Zero. It's an Amazon original movie.
Hmm.
It takes place in 1977. In rural Georgia, 1977, a group of elementary misfits led by a spunky outcast, Christmas Flint, joins forces to infiltrate the high and mighty Birdie Scouts youth group in order to win a talent show. Basically, it's like the Bad News Bears knockoff Girl Scouts edition.
Okay.
It was decent. I liked it. I can't give it a hard sell. Viola Davis is in it, and Jim Gaffigan's in it, Mike Epps. The girl, the Christmas Flint, Jim Gaffigan's her dad, and Viola Davis is like he's a lawyer, and she's his secretary, and her, of course her mom died, and so Viola Davis has kind of become de facto mom, but only because she works for her dad, and everything.
Okay.
And these kids are outcasts. I mean, one kid doesn't have an eye. One kid's a bully whose nickname is Hell No because she says Hell No all the time.
Wait. The kid doesn't have an eye as in, like, is missing one eye or has zero eyes?
No. This kid is missing an eye.
Okay.
One little girl is missing an eye. She loves Jesus. And she's an evangelist who's afraid to talk to people. And then you have the bully.
What?
Yeah. You have the bully Hell No. That's her nickname.
Yeah.
And her Smash is her silent muscle.
Okay.
And then Christmas Flint
The bully needs muscle?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, look at the Toy Story. You know, Scarfargus had his little toady, so this is kind of like her toady.
Okay.
You have this 1977, so you have the boy who's on the team because there's nothing in the handbook that says a boy can't be a Birdie Scout, and he's gay, clearly gay. And then you have Christmas Flint, who is the little girl, you know, whose mom died, and yeah.
So, wow. Did they just open up a cliche book and point to a random page?
Kinda, yeah. But the movie itself was decent.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I can't give it a hard sell, but it was decent. What'd you watch for movies?
I watched Alita Battle Angel.
Oh, I almost watched it myself. How was it?
It's really decent, actually.
Yeah.
It's got some good story beats to it. You know, class warfare. Basically, they all live. There's one floating city that's left. It's the last of the floating cities. Everybody else lives on the surface and they're pretty much in poverty. You know, it's a junk place. But they do the best that they can. And right in the beginning, Christoph Waltz is digging through the junkyard and he finds a cyborg and puts her back together with the body of his daughter. Because you can do that apparently as long as the brain is intact, you can put the brain in different bodies. It's very common. He's a doctor who does cybernetic replacement parts for people. Some of them are pretty chintzy looking. So I feel like he's the ghetto guy. But the fight scenes are great. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I would definitely give it a good hard sell.
I tried to watch Horse Girl.
Okay.
Did you?
I fully watched Horse Girl.
Okay. When I say I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't know. I mean,
I knew it was going to be weird from the trailer.
Yeah.
This was just fucking bizarre.
It was bizarre. It's almost kind of reminds me of how bizarre, like, the one with Scarlett Johansson where she walks across this thing naked and guys walk into the pit behind her and disappear. Whatever the fucking that movie was.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it's not good. Anyways.
Not Lucy.
No. Anyways, but no, Horse Girl, I don't know. I mean, we got to see Alison Brie's boobs, but that's not worth watching that for just that.
Go watch Glow and see that.
And enjoy it. Really, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was just, it got more and more bizarre. Like, she was a weirdo to begin with. Like, yes. She'd go there and the people at the horse place were like creeped out that she was even there. And then they were like, she's not your horse anymore. You need to stay away from her.
Right.
And then by the end of it, like, she's stealing fabric from the store that she works at and making outfits for herself and for the horse to protect them. And then the guy that, like, she went on one date with, and then he was like cool at first, and then he was creeped out. And then afterwards he's like, now I'm cool again. And I want to wear one of those outfits because we had sex and it was good. And
yeah, I don't know. It's fucked up.
It was just so bizarre.
Yeah. Like, and she thought she was like a clone of her grandmother.
Who, yeah. Because they look the same.
Yeah.
I can make the same look if I pose that way.
Right. Well, no shit. Yeah, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I watched Six Underground.
I was just going to say, I know that there's another movie.
And I'm just going to say, this is the most Michael Bayist Michael Bay movie I've ever seen.
Dude, watching that, what was his name there?
Ryan Reynolds?
No. The kid who was on the last season of Scrubs as the douchebag.
Oh,
his brother.
David Franco.
David Franco, yeah. Watching him get impaled in the beginning, like in the first, I don't even know how fucking long
15
that
minutes.
God
yeah, 20 minutes,
scene
yeah.
was. Yeah, watching him get impaled, I was like, wow, that was really overly violent.
Yeah.
There was everything in this movie was over the top.
Yes, everything. The action was over the top. The dialogue was over the top.
The
violence was over the top when there was violence.
Like, here's the top, and then somebody created a new top so that they could go over that top.
Yeah, it was doubly over the top.
Yeah.
It was absurd. There was a level of absurdity I've never seen before in a movie.
And this is why I told you have to watch to believe it. Like, I couldn't have possibly sold it as well as you can experience it by watching.
And here's the thing. I didn't hate the movie.
No. Nope.
I just was blown away by just how
juvenile
absurd it was. I don't know. It was just, yeah.
Dude, tell me you weren't watching parts of that and thinking this was ripped directly out of an 11-year-old's notebook. Like, he wrote this for English class or something.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I could definitely.
And then we're going to have, they're going to have the sex in the middle of the thing while everybody else is doing stuff around it.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. Did you watch any other films?
I did.
What'd you watch?
I braved the storm on Friday night.
Okay.
Because my buddy Petrie asked me if I wanted to go see a movie with him. We went and saw Parasite.
Which won the Oscar for Best Picture and Best Director and Best Foreign Film or International Film.
Yep. And Best Original Screenplay.
Yep.
Yep. Set some records. It was the first South Korean movie to win an Oscar.
Yep.
It was the first non-English movie to win Best Picture in the 92 years of history.
Yep.
And Bong Joon-ho, the guy who won all four Oscars, he tied Walt Disney for that.
Really?
Yeah. Walt Disney was the last person to get four in one night.
Oh, wow.
Well, the big four like that. So, yeah. Having seen the movie, it earned them.
Yeah?
This was a damn solid movie.
Nice.
Two things I will say about it, and only two things. One, the less you know about it going in, the better.
Perfect.
You will enjoy yourself. Two, don't be intimidated by the fact, and this is not you, this is anybody else who's listening. Don't be intimidated by the fact that it's all subtitled. You will forget very soon into the movie. You won't even realize that you're reading the subtitles. Yeah. It's damn solid.
Subtitles don't bother me in the slightest.
Right, right. I know a lot of people do.
They're
like, I don't want to read. I want to watch.
Yeah.
Trust me. You're going to want to see this movie. It was really good.
Nice.
Now, that being said, people who want to see this should see it sooner rather than later, because HBO is making a series on it.
Oh, really?
They're turning it into a series. It was announced today that Mark Ruffalo is being talked to be one of the characters in it. Now, the very interesting part of this is that Bong Soon-Yu,
yeah,
who did it, is doing the series. And he is very happy because he says he had a lot of ideas that couldn't make it to film because there just wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
And he said that he's really excited to now be able to bring those to, but it's going to be Americanized.
Well, it's kind of like, I can't remember that one. It's one of the horrible movies, either Ring or Ringu or whatever. When it was made in Japan, it was a huge success. When they made the American version, same director directed the American version as he did the Japanese version. And he, same thing, he had a bigger budget. He was able to make it, do more with it than he wanted. So, The Grudge, I think, actually, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yep, The Grudge, you're right. I'm going to be interested, though, to see the HBO series. Honestly, like, everyone needs to watch this fucking movie. It was great. but I'm going to be interested because a lot of the stuff that's in here could be translated, you know, it could translate to American culture, but there's also an awful lot of stuff that
I couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very South Korean thing. You know, they're having conversations about missiles, you know, and bunkers because, you know, North Korea could fire missiles at any moment. The way that their houses are set up, the way their neighborhoods are set up, it would be hard to
duplicate that over here.
Yeah, I don't think that
I have seen the beginning of the flick. Like, the family lives in that basement apartment, and their toilet is, like, up on a shelf, and they have to go over there to get the Wi-Fi. And, yeah, their living arrangements is not living arrangements that you would see here.
Right.
Yeah, so I get what you mean.
Yeah. Damn solid flick, though. Nice. I'm glad that dude, it was rough. Like, I almost didn't go out because we had that ice storm. And driving up the highway, I was doing, like, 35, 40. And I was like, why am I doing this?
What time did you go out?
It was a 7 o'clock movie. And I went out to meet him. He got out of work at 5:30. So I left the house at like 4:45.
Yeah.
And didn't get up there till like 5:30.
Oh, see, we went to Kate's cousin's house over on Riverside Drive in Augusta.
Yeah, I remembered you said you were doing something.
Didn't have any issues.
Really?
Yeah.
The highway was bad.
Oh, see, it was funny. We almost took the highway. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm not going to do that. I took East Side, Route 9 Chelsea. Didn't have any issues, got to our house. And then even when we left, I thought I'll take the interstate back. And I was like, nah, I just went through Hollowell and Farmingdale and I didn't have any road issues. So that's cool. Yeah.
Yep. But had a nice dinner.
Nice.
And then watched that. Dude, that movie was really
good. I do want to check that out.
Yeah.
I got a red box Saturday night after I got back from the Bruins game.
Yep.
I got Dr. Sleep.
What'd you think?
I loved it.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was excellent.
That was phenomenal.
Like, yeah. That is much better than I thought it was going to be.
Me too.
Yeah.
When I saw it in the theater, I was like, wow, this is legitimately better.
Even when they tied in, like, The Shining, more so than in the movie than it does is in the book, apparently. But when they had to get a different actress to play Shelley Long's character. They got a different actor
Although,
to play
Jack Nicholson's character. Didn't she kind of look creepily like her?
Yeah, they look very similar. Much more so than the Jack Nicholson character.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Yeah, that was almost like you tried hard, but not really hard enough, and why'd you bother?
Like, I looked it up afterwards, and I'm like, was that supposed to be Jack Nicholson's character, or was that supposed to be someone else?
Yeah, it was.
Because it didn't look enough like him.
No. And they didn't give us a good shot of him either, so. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, it was really solid movie. Yeah, I love the villain.
Yes.
What was it, Rose in the Hat?
Rose the Hat or something like that, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yep.
I thought, actually, I mean, a lot of the storyline comes from Stephen King adapting the movie, and it's almost like, wow, he did a really good job adapting.
And in his original book, The Shining, the hotel burned down.
Yeah.
In the movie, it did not.
Right.
So they kind of rectified and tied that together.
And burnt it down in this movie.
Yep. Yeah.
Watch anything else?
Not for movies. No.
I watched one more movie.
What'd you get?
I watched Jay and the Silent Bob Reboot.
How was it?
So this was a combination of part of what I loved about his movies, and then a combination of the hot garbage he's doing now.
Oh. Was it a 50-50 mix, or did one win out?
No, it was kind of 50-50.
Okay.
Like, for instance, I get that he built his career on a bunch of dick and fart jokes, but it's like they were They were highbrow dick and fart jokes.
The ones in Clerks were.
You know what I mean?
Rats, not so much.
Well, but Temple of the Movie makes sense.
Right.
These ones were basically cheap pops. They did a lot of...
would you call it stoner humor?
No, I'd call it cheap pop.
Okay.
You know, kind of like when Mick Foley, a wrestler's, and he's like, I'm so happy you're right here in New York City. And they're in New York, and people go, yeah, that's where I am right now. Same type of thing. It's like, mm-hmm. just generate a reaction. His daughter's in it, of course. There's a lot of... like Kevin Smith at one point in the movie plays Kevin Smith.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Because he's the new director of the Button Land Iconic reboot. And they basically explain the difference between a Hollywood remake and a Hollywood reboot and what it means and this and that. And of course, they're trying to go to Hollywood again this time to stop the reboot, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like you have Kevin Smith's daughter, Harley Quinn. Her character in the movie says, I fucking hate this guy. He always makes his, puts his, now that his daughter's acting, he puts her in all his movies and she just brings him down or something. You know what I mean? Like, so she's shitting on herself, but not herself. There's a gotcha. Lot of that.
Yeah.
There's a couple parts I really want to tell you, but I don't want to ruin them because, I mean, I'm sure you're going to watch it someday.
Hmm. Oh, absolutely.
But I don't, when's that day going to be?
Well, would you get it on Redbox?
No.
Oh.
I watched it in other ways.
Okay.
I didn't download it. I'll say that.
Okay.
So, but I'll say that there's one, okay, so there's one part in the movie, because we get to see, you know, like, we get to see Loki from Dogma.
Oh, good.
He kind of tells us where he's been.
Nice.
And he's the narrator.
Oh, cool.
We see Brody Lee.
Mm.
Wait, that's Jason Lee.
Jason Lee.
Yeah, we see Brody.
Brody Bruce.
Brody Bruce, there we go. We don't see Banky. We see Holden.
No.
Brian O'Halloran's in it as Dante and as Brian O'Halloran. And he plays another Hicks news reporter guy.
Oh, cool.
Shannon Elizabeth's back in it this time, of course. But she just has kind of a brief part. Rosario Dawson's back in it. So there's a lot of heavy cameos in it.
Okay.
There's a part in the movie, and I'm not going to talk about it in any way, shape, or form that made me cry.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it. Okay. And it was like, I wanted to buy the movie immediately because I want to see this again.
Oh, wow.
This one particular scene. And then there's...
I can already picture exactly what it is.
What do you think it is?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
Because I want to be surprised, but I have a feeling I know what it is,
yeah.
Or at least along the lines of what it is, and that I'm going to come to you afterwards and be like, this was the part, wasn't it?
There's another scene where Ben Affleck is talking, and he's doing one of the kind of famous Kevin Smith's monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about Batman and this and that and everything. Cool. And he makes a comment of like, and whatever his mother's name is, I just can't remember it. And then he looks at the camera and looks and goes back to talking in the scene.
Nice.
So that was hilarious.
Nice.
Yeah. If I was my Kevin Smith collection, it consists of Clerks, Mallrats, Dogma, Chasing Amy, you know, obviously in the right order. Mm-hmm. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back,
mm-hmm.
and Clerks 2.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't buy Jersey Girl. I didn't buy Cop Out. I didn't buy the Yoga Hosers or Walrus.
Nope.
I have no interest in those. I
didn't.
Tusk. Yeah. I didn't buy the one with John Goodman, the religious one. I've seen them all. I have no
Red
interest. Yeah, Red State. I've seen them all. I have no interest in buying or owning any of those. But I feel like I do need to get this one to add it to my...
Well, it seems like the first one that went back to the universe.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah. I do feel like I need to buy this to go back to my collection. There is a lot of pot-smoking references in this one, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like I need to buy this one to add it to my collection. And I'm very curious about the Clerks 3.
Mm.
And there is... not so much a PS scene, but there is some stuff in the credits.
Okay.
And then there is, because it's just kind of through the whole credits, but like there's a scene where you see Stan Lee. Okay. And Kevin Smith is talking to him, and he goes, yeah, it's called Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and you know, you're one of the central characters in the show, and I want to have in the movie. And Stan's like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, oh, great. And then you look, and it's fat Kevin Smith. It's pre-heart attack Kevin Smith. So this is obviously another one of his ideas that he's had for a long time, mm-hmm. that he hasn't done anything with or gets put to the back burner, blah, 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 blah. And he kind of does a little quote-unquote scene with Stan Lee, which is kind of fun to watch.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I will say on Amazon right now, Prime Video, $4.99 to rent the movie.
Yeah.
Starting at $9.99 to buy it digitally.
Yeah.
And then if you want the Blu-ray, it's $15.52.
Yeah, that's not bad.
The DVD is $13.99. So for an extra $1.50.
I would buy the Blu-ray. Yeah. It's probably a combo one, too. But anyways, yeah. So it's there was some great moments that I really liked in it.
It's Blu-ray plus digital.
There you go, yeah. But there were some good moments I really, really, really liked in it. And other moments that I was just like, ugh. So like I said, it's kind of a 50-50 mix of his old style greatness and new style schlock.
Hmm.
You know, it's funny. I really don't have any news or trailers at all.
Hold on, let me fill your ear hole.
Good. Please do.
I sent you a trailer for Spiral from the Book of Saw.
Oh, shit, that's right. See, you know what throws me off? We went and had dinner last Thursday, and that was, so that was right.
You're like, we only hang out once a week.
No. But it's just throwing me off because, like, when I was trying, I was like, we talked about Flash, and he said I should watch it, but this was on after we recorded. Like, how did that happen? So, yes, Spiral, continue.
Well, I was going to ask you because you're the Saw aficionado.
I really enjoyed this trailer. I think it looks good. Like, I remember when I first thought, oh, Chris Rock is going to reboot Saw. This is going to be fucking garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It looks great. Samuel L. Jackson's in it. The trailer was excellent. I mean, they didn't say Jigsaw. We didn't get the, I want to play a game. But you did see there were games in it.
Well, and Sam Jackson said, you want to play a game, motherfucker?
Yeah, that's true.
So.
But.
Spiral, because of the spiral in the eye of the doll.
Yep.
What was the doll's name? Didn't he have a name?
Billy.
Yeah, I think that was it.
But yeah, it looks good. The trailer looks really good. I was impressed with it.
Yep. I saw a trailer for a movie called Irresistible. You'd probably have no interest in it. It has Steve Carell. It's a political movie, but it's a comedy where they're trying to, you know, he's trying to get Chris Cooper to, you know, be the next mayor or governor of a, like, New Hampshire type thing.
I feel like I've heard about that.
It looks great. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And I also watched the trailer for Minions Rise of Gru.
I did see that trailer. Actually, yeah.
I'll check it out some point.
Yeah.
In the background.
Right. It'll be watched. I may take Wesley to the movies to see that.
There you go.
You know?
So, Disney announced August is when we're going to get Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yep.
October is when we're getting Season 2 of Mandalorian.
Yep.
And December is when we're getting WandaVision.
Okay.
Similar news, Sam Raimi could be taking over the next Doctor Strange movie.
Yes, we talked about that the other night. Yeah. Yep.
Bruce Campbell tweeted out in Bruce Campbell fashion, well, that's not strange. Perfect. Now, of course, there was the controversy that the original director of Doctor Strange, the first one,
yes,
was directing the second one and then left, citing creative differences.
Right.
Whenever they cite that, you don't know what it means.
It's a vague blanket, yeah.
And you don't know if they're mad at the company or the company's mad at them or what. So for the time being, I love Sam Raimi. I would love to see him get a foothold in the MCU.
Absolutely.
Because you know Bruce Campbell will have a cameo.
Yep.
The Kent twins have been cast.
The Kent twins?
Yeah. So, you know, Lois and Superman?
Oh, yeah.
Jordan Elsass and Alexander Garfin will be in the roles of Jonathan and Jordan Kent, presumably twins for Superman and Lois Lane. Of course, in the comics, we just had Jonathan who became Superboy.
Yeah.
These are the descriptions. Elsass's Jonathan is clean-cut, modest, and kind-hearted with an aw-shucks attitude that somehow doesn't seem dated. So, Clark Kent. Garland's Jordan is wildly intelligent, but his mercurial temperament and social anxiety limits his interactions with people, and consequently, Jordan prefers to spend most of his free time alone playing video games. So, me.
Yeah.
I can tell you which one I'm going to relate to more. So, that'll be interesting. And apparently they are teenagers. So we're not going to see babies. We're going to see full-on teenagers. We already went over Sex Education's coming back. The Rookie comes back February 23rd. Thank God. That's like 2 weeks, dude. You know, we have an extended weekend coming up, right?
Yes, I'm not working Friday because I have a pre-op surgery appointment.
Nice. So you get a 4-day weekend.
Yep.
Kirk Douglas passed away at the age of 103.
Good long life.
Hard to feel like, what a waste. I think of that. It's kind of like my grandfather lived to be 101 and a half, and it's the same kind of thing. You're like,
I still like how you tell me the story, how you had that big, huge birthday party before it was 100, and then when you turn 101, you're like, what do we do now?
Yeah. Like, what's going on? This kind of came out of the blue. I'd completely forgotten about it, but I wanted to make sure to let you know because I know you were a fan like I was. March 6th. Season 2 of Paradise PD.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
March 6th. That's not far away at all.
Oh, there's something else that's coming up at the end of this month, actually, I saw. I meant to write it down and I forgot. On Netflix. I think Altered Carbon's coming back soon.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's coming back within the next week or two.
Yeah, I think exactly. It's 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. So The Rookie and Altered Carbon will be back at the same time. That's exciting. And then Paradise PD.
Ooh, nice.
That's going to be a fun one. That's going to be a fun one, a slow burn, because that's another one of those shows that I loved it, but all the episodes kind of blended together. So
Paradise PD, and it's only a half hour. I mean, you could easily just run right through that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got, though.
Okay.
That's everything.
Well, I think it's a good amount.
Yeah.
So next week, we'll be recording on Sunday, Monday again for episode 200.
Mm.
And then episode 201, we're going to record a day early.
Yep.
And it's pretty cool.
We're not doing anything fancy for episode 200, people.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's going to be business as usual.
Basically, yeah.
We're not going to step outside of our comfort zones or, you know, get some fancy new music or new graphics or anything like that.
Nope, we're not.
Because you know what?
Tried and true.
That's right.
Tried and true.
Yeah, we just do what we do.
All right. Well, I'm Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's the show.